Halacha Kuf Tesvav on page Kuf Yud Aleph. Page Kuf Yud Aleph. Kuf Yud Aleph. Here's another halacha that we don't relate to in our day and age, in the modern world, we don't relate to. On page Kuf Yud Aleph. Halacha Kuf Tesvav. Kishirabo Diyoyal Ois Lo Yichtoiv Es Hashem Mimenu. Okay, if you don't. If you never studied Safros, never played with a quill and dioy, then you have no clue what this means. The way you write, the way a Sefer Torah is written is in the old-fashioned way with a kulmus, a quill, and dioy. It is nothing like a ballpoint pen. Okay, the nature of how of the experience is like none other. Okay, it's nothing that we can relate to. Today, the main difference is as follows. When you write with a pen, you put the pen where you want, and you move it where you want. And wherever you move it, that's where the ink goes. If a better pen, a more expensive pen, a cheaper pen, whatever you want to do, but it's all the same. In the olden days, that's not the way it works. When you write, what you're really doing is you're pulling ink. You put on the cloth a drop of ink, and the ink, the nature of ink, it's thick. There's a thickness to it. And the way you write, it's art. You pull, you draw it, you pull it across the page to the position where you want the ink to appear. That's an completely different experience than writing with a ballpoint. With a kulmus. You're putting on the paper ink. Whenever you're writing on when you write a sofer writes, he dips the kulmus into the quill, the keses. The keses of sofer inkwell. He pulls out ink. When he puts his feather, his pen, his kulmus on the parchment, he's basically making a deposit. A deposit of ink. And then the work begins. He then pulls that ink where he wants it to go.
Hopefully it doesn't dry before.
Okay, so it's a very different experience to write with a kulmus than it is to write with a regular pen. Even you go by in the store, these fancy these fountain pens. Fountain pen is also really no different than a ballpoint pen. It's an entirely different experience. Now, here's the question. A person is writing a Sefer Torah, and he is up to writing Hashem's name. We won't spend time learning this in Aruch HaShulchan, on the learns of Safras. If you're writing Hashem's name, what is the halach when you write Hashem's name? You have to say, L'shem Kiddushas Hashem. If a Sefer forgets to say, L'shem Kiddushas Hashem, before he writes Hashem's name in the Sefer Torah is possible.
You think I believe that every time they run
you better believe it. You better believe it, or else Sefer Torah is possible. You better believe it.
$50,000, you better believe it.
You better believe it.
You can take out the part of the cloth.
So let me tell you the answer to your question. I don't want to go off too much on a tangent, Rabbi Isai. I don't want to get out there, but what happens? Well, there's certain seifrim that really do it so well to the point where I give you a mashal. I went to a course many years ago in Safras, a fascinating course in Safras. There's two parts, halacha and the umnas. And in the halacha, he was talking about this halacha, that if you did not say l'shem kedushas Hashem, the Sefer Torah is possible. And he says there was a seifer that a little OCD, and he came to the Rav and he says, I really don't remember if this morning when I wrote Hashem's name, if I said L'shem Kiddushas Hashem. So the Rav said to him, I think you should say the other thing, Yeshayla by you, knowing you, it's the other way around. It's likely that when you polish your shoes, you also say L'shem Kiddushas Hashem. That's what he said to him. I know you. You have OCD. When you polish your shoes, you say L'shem Kiddushas Hashem. So certainly, when you wrote Hashem's name, you could assume L'halacha, you said L'shem Kiddushas Hashem.
Does he have to have kavana when he says it? Or if he's polishing
no,
his
you don't have to have kavana. You just have lip service. So the amount of kavana you need is so minimal. It's so minimal. It's okay. This is a controversial halach that said in the Mishnah Berurah, and this is discussed in Pesach Sefer, is what Seferim do to solve the problem is, before they begin writing a Sefer Torah, for the very first time they make a declaration. I hereby announce that every time I write in this Sefer Torah, Yudke Vavke, it's L'Shem Kedushas Hashem. And now I don't have to do it anymore. And now I don't have to. It's not so simple. It's not so simple if that works.
Even if you forget, you only have to replace that section.
That section? You know what it is to replace a section? A whole section? You know how long it takes to write? It's 2 days work.
What could you do?
2 days work. And who would know? Who would know? No one would know.
That's a different problem.
It's like I was in the kitchen, in a commercial kitchen, and some food fell off. I saw my own eyes. I saw my own eyes, this Rabbi Sai. I was in the kitchen in a commercial setting, and a whole pot of food fell on the floor.
So he
fixed
it up.
He
put it back in the pot.
And he said to me, no one's going to know. You think I'm joking? I'm not joking.
I have dinner.
What do you think happens to yeshiva? What do you think happens
to yeshiva? Cool, what a restaurant. On the restaurant would have on the outside, grade A. The city has given this grade A. Well, there's no inspector here today.
When the inspector came,
it was grade A. Today there's no inspector. Today it's business as usual. Okay, boys, let's not get distracted. Let's learn something serious today. Okay? Hey, here's the issue. A person's writing a Sefer Torah, you write it, and then you write on the... Here's what happens. When you put down, as I told you, the way you write is you make a deposit. You take the kolmos, and you dip it into the inkwell, and then you put the kolmos on the parchment. By putting the kolmos on the parchment, you are in essence making a deposit of ink. And then you take your kolmos and you pull it. You drag it. Sometimes you make too much of a deposit. You put in the bag too much ink. So what do you do? It's a very big problem. Because ink goes one way. There's no way to take the ink back. You can't take the ink back. The only thing you can possibly do is, what you'll do is, there's too much ink there. So you'll I won't write this word. I'll go to the next line, as long as it's not to fill in.
Piece of cloth.
What?
Yeah,
it's not so simple. But let's say just a drop too much. So what you'll do is you'll dip your kolmos into that ink that's too much, and you'll apply the extra ink. You'll double up on some other letters on the page. Some other letters need a little more ink. The whole way of writing is so foreign to us. You have to be a servant to appreciate
like
this.
A little bit like a fountain pen in the old days.
You're making a deposit of ink on the page.
Where you went like this to the bottom.
It's more like painting with the oils or something.
Right, exactly. You're making a deposit. You take the dip the kolmos into the inkwell, you put the kolmos on the paper, on the parchment. What you're doing is you're dropping ink, and you have to be experienced. And if you drop, then after you drop the ink, you quickly pull it. You drag the ink into the position you want to form the letter. But sometimes by accident you drop too much ink. And you drop too much ink, so you can salvage, and the world is not over, and you can just dip your kolmos and use that as your inkwell. That collection of ink that's a drop too much is now going to be a miniature inkwell for another letter. So I dip my kolmos in that drop of ink that's a little bit too much for what I need over here. To salvage it shouldn't be a problem. I dip it, and I'll go use it to write another letter somewhere else.
If it's Hashem's name, and you'll have to use it for another word.
Oh, excellent. That's what I'm coming to right now. But one case at a time. First case is I'm writing a word that's not Hashem's name. It's not Hashem's name, and there's too much ink here. Oh, too much ink. Let me take that extra ink that I've already dropped and use it to write Hashem's name. Here, I've always said there's too much distraction here. Please, because just a little more decorum. Are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to go and dip the kolmos into that ink and go and use it to write Hashem's name? Or is that considered to be disgraceful? So here the Kesef says, Kisharob diyoy al ois, when there's too much ink on an ois, lo yichtoiv es Hashem mimenu. It's a disgrace to Hashem's name that Hashem's name should be written with leftover ink. don't use too much ink. Oh, I got a problem. Oh, you know who? No, I'll use it. Right, exactly. Now, what is now here? Here's the next case from Mr. Marilla. Let's go the way around. V'chein m'roba al Hashem. Let us say you wrote Yudkei Vavkei, and when you wrote Yudkei Vavkei, there's too much ink. So let me draw from the letters of Hashem's name, which is too much. If I allow it to remain like this, it's not going to dry well because it's too much ink. So let me use Hashem's name as an inkwell for another letter. V'chein m'roba al Hashem lo yichtov mimenu oisacheres. You're not allowed to use that extra ink, for it's a disgrace to Hashem's name. So don't take ink that's leftover ink to write Hashem's name, and don't take from Hashem's name to write another letter. That's disgraceful for Hashem's name. These are things you never know, right? You look at the Sefer Torah, you never know how the Sefer Torah was written. Yeah, the Sefer has to know these halachas. These are very complicated halachas.
So what do you do in this case if you wrote Hashem's name?
So ask the Sefer. So basically, you do whatever you can do, whatever. They know what to do. They do the best they can do. You let it. If there's too much ink,
What about Hashem? Are you allowed to take a tissue?
There are seven names in our Kodesh. Kel, Tzivokos, Shakai. There are seven. Other do not have Kedusha. Yeah.
So are you allowed to take a tissue to absorb some of that?
Yes, yes. Yes.
You can't just discard it.
But the issue that has Kedusha...
Probably.
Yes, that's correct. The shemais of a Sefer Torah have an enormous kedusha. A sefer, the halacha, it's halacha shulchan aruch. There are very few things that you have that a man has to go to mikvah for. When does a man ever have to go to mikvah? Almost never. They go erev Yom Kippur. The only time you have to go to mikvah, meikar hadin bisman azeh, is about teshuvah. A person who's choizer Jew, Rachman Litzlan, who's not Shem Shabbos, and he's choizer b'shuvah, and he sincerely does shuvah, one of the things he's obligated to do is to go to mikvah. Yeah. That's why we go to mikvah every Yom Kippurim. The only reason why we go is not, oh, it's a nice thing to go to every Yom Kippurim. If that's the reason why, you should go every Shabbos to mikvah, every Erev Shabbos. The reason why you go to mikvah Erev Yom Kippurim is because of the din of about teshuvah. Now, people don't consider themselves about teshuvah to the degree where they're mechuyev to go. A person, Rachmanov of Mechal Shabbos, then his mechuyev, when he does teshuva, part of the process of doing teshuva is to go to mikvah. A baal teshuva, a real baal, I mean, whatever, everyone's a baal teshuva to a degree, but a person who's mechal Shabbos has to go to mikvah. So Erev Yom Kippurim, we're all together, baalei teshuva, you go to mikvah. You're supposed to dip three times. Chet, pesha, and avon. Connected the three words. Chet, pesha, avon, because that's the purpose. There's another inyan of going to mikvah, called Toisefes Kedusha, to bring upon yourself an additional degree of sanctity. And then there's another inyan going to mikvah for Tfilas Keri, a person who's not clean because he's a Baal Keri. Then there's an inyan of going to mikvah to be Mitar himself from Keri. Three, so therefore, for a man today, there are only three times when he would want to go to mikvah: a Baal Keri, Toisefes Kedusha, and Teshuvah.
A chassan
is a minah. No, there's no makar for that. There's no makar. Tosefes kedusha is like a tosefes kedusha type of thing. A woman has to go to mikvah midoy raisa. Syria nidas kores. Okay, so and that's why the standards for a kosher woman's mikvah are very, very high, because you're dealing with a chiyuv kores. A man's mikvah, there's no daraisa for a man. No such thing. Yom Kippurim, you go to mikvah, teshuvah, you want to go Erev Hashanah. Erev Hashanah is not teshuvah, Erev Hashanah is really Tosefes Kedusha. You want to go Erev Shabbos, Baal Keri, all of these things, those are all midrabanans, that's why. Now, but however, even though a man doesn't need to go to mikvah these things, a soifer must go to mikvah. A soifer when? Only when he writes to shame Hashem.
But how do you explain that he puts a drop of ink first? So that he still didn't write nothing.
It doesn't matter. It was not intended. It is not intended for Hashem's name. It was not intended. When a sofer writes Hashem's name, lahaloch, he first must go to mikvah. He has to be tar from tefilas keri. And then he has to say, l'shem kedushas Hashem. So he goes to show how intense the kedusha of writing Hashem's name is. Therefore, if you put down ink on the parchment with the intent that it go for a different letter, that's not Hashem's name, it's not proper. Not that it's usur, but it's not proper to take from that ink and use it to write Hashem's name when we see the severity of how great it is to write Hashem's name. There are some seifim that used to be this. I don't know if they still do today. Is that many seifim they did not go to mikvah? It was not popular to go to mikvah. It wasn't easy, convenient to go to mikvah. So they would write a whole sefer Torah and they would skip every Shem Hashem. They would skip every Shem Hashem. Every time it says Yudki Vavki Elokim Tzavaka Shakai, they would skip it. And then when they were finished, they would go to mikvah and in one shot, Lashem Kedushas Hashem, and then they would fill in all of the Shemos to sefer Torah. Today, the minug is, today this is not halacha, but the minug, I told you this many times, the minug today is that seferim don't write anything in the Sefer Torah unless they go to mikvah, unless they're taught. It's a chumrah, it's a new chumrah today. It's a new chumrah today because since today, the most 95% of Sefer Torah are written in Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael, there are mikvahs every corner, very nice mikvahs, beautiful mikvahs. I went to Eretz Yisrael, I was in Geula, and you know, it looked like not nice to say there, it's sure, but it looked like something you would see on television about Afghanistan, right? Like some blown up, Lahavdil, blown up little. And I asked someone who was Arab Shabbat, is there a mikvah? Yeah, you mean us, small, you know, the whole thing, you go give me a whole Megillah. And I go, a mikvah here? You're kidding me. Mamish, it looks like Chesnish, like it was bombed. And then mikvah, I go down steps, I walk into a place I never in my life saw, a state-of-the-art, high-tech, clean as a whistle.
Was there a coffee machine?
Probably also. I was blown away at the cleanliness and the technology and the beauty.
This was amazing.
Buried underground in the middle of a place you never in your life would expect.
This was a man's mikvah?
Yeah, a man's mikvah. Three mikvahs. Three massive, beautiful, and I'm going to say Olympic-sized swimming pools, but pretty beautiful. One was like Goldilocks. One was cold, not cold ever, warm. One was hot, and one was very hot. Hot like a henna. And you have your choice. Yeah.
Two questions. First one, when they show archaeological sites of old mikvahs, they always have two, an entrance and an exit. What was the significance of...
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
The other question is, did the Seifrim make an outline of letters beforehand?
No, they don't. They only make the outline at the end for Hachnasa Sefer Torah, to fill in the dots. That's the only time they do it.
So that Seifrim that leaves out the Shem Hashem, you have to... Yes,
no, they don't leave that. Every time I've been to Hachnasa Sefer Torah, the Shem Hashem is already filled in. They do that outline, those last few lines, the Shem Hashem is always filled in. It's always filled in.
When I have too much ink, Hashem, and the next word is also Hashem. Hashem, okay.
Could be it's mutter.
Can you use it for both?
Could be, yeah. Because Hashem, Hashem's name.
Does Hashem say the Kavana for both? Or one has
you want Kavana, you say the Shem Kedushan. Today, Rabbi Yisai, for whatever the reason is, it's not a halacha. The minig is that Seifer, because it's so convenient, and they write whatever they go to mikvah before they even put their edit even for by anything they do. Ad kidei kach. I remember the shal many years ago. There was a Seifer, and he didn't go to mikvah. Obviously, he wasn't tar. I guess he was a balkari, and he was parnasa. And he woke up in the morning and he just forgot to go to the mikvah, and he went and he sat down in his whatever. And he started writing. And he wrote whatever, a half a column. And then he realized, well, he forgot to go to mikvah. And there were no shemos. He wrote, there were no, the Shem Hashem did not appear anywhere that he wrote. So he asked Rav Yashav, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that you know, he wrote the whole Sefer Torah, and there was just a half of a column that he forgot. He forgot to go to mikvah, and he doesn't have to go to mikvah. He only has to go to mikvah for the shemos. But whatever, all the Seifer narratives show they go to mikvah before they do anything. Does he have to tell the buyer that this Sefer Torah that I'm selling you, half of one of the 245 columns, I did not write it in the state of Tahara. I did not go to the mikvah. Now, 20 years ago, it's not even a shaila. It's not even expected that you should go to mikvah only for the shemos. But today, this was commonly done, and I just forgot to do it, half a column. Do I have to tell the buyer? So Yashu says, yeah, you do. Because today it's so widely accepted in Eretz Yisrael that they go to mikvah. So that is the understanding when you're buying the Sefer Torah and you're misleading. It's Geneva's Das. It's 100% kosher. 100% kosher Luhuda. Luhuda. Nothing to discuss. Nothing to discuss. But it's a Geneva Star, Shiloh. Today it's the standard. Now, I spoke with someone very recently who's in the business, heavily steeped in the business. He told me that today the business became so crazy. Rabbi Cohn was here. He spoke a few times. And he mentioned that today, like, for example, to write the Tagin. Anyone can do the Tagin, to make the Tagin. It's not a matter of, it doesn't take that much skill to make the Tagin, but it takes time. So Sof and Fine, they can make a lot more money if we'll write the whole Sefer Torah without the Tagin. And then they'll give it to a beginner, we'll pay him a few dollars to do. I remember I was at a tile guy to do tiles. So he did all the tiles. And what about the grout? Someone's coming in, I'm not doing the grout. Why not? He just says, no. Because every moan by him is money, skilled work to cut the tiles with precision. I'm going to go spend 3 hours doing your grout. I'm going to send in someone I'm going to pay minimum wage. I get paid $50 an hour, $100 an hour, whatever it is, to cut with precision these expensive tiles. Grout? Anyone can smear it with grout. Do it yourself. I'm going to go waste 3 hours of my time to go do the grout for you. I'm sending in a guy who'll do it for $5, $10, whatever it is, minimum wage, he's going to do the grout. With Sifrei Torah Lahavdil, it's the same exact thing. I have skill. I am a skill. I can write beautiful ksav. I have to do the tagim also. Tagim anyone can do. So I'll write and I'll pay a minimum wage to someone to write the tagim for me. Now this has gone to an extreme. Meaning when you commission a sofer to write a sefer Torah, there's a long list of check marks of what you want him to, all of the hidurim that you want him to do, and for every hidur, you pay more money. It's an incredible thing what's happened today. In other words, like for tefillin, do you want, there's such a chumrah, you want the sofer to write the whole thing in one sitting. To write the whole parish, like, it's almost impossible to do that. But let's see, one of these is the shalyan, the shalrosh. Why is an advantage? There are certain advantages. You don't want him to talk, to be mafsik. When he's writing, you don't want him to do this. I don't know all the details. There are a lot of different hidurim which no one ever paid attention to. And some do, some do not. And because today we live in this society where everything is so much in the open, everything is so much, you know, transparency, and how much you get paid, every dollar counts in this. So it became, and this is what I was told very recently, it became a very big thing where basically if you hire a sefer to write a sefer Torah for you, and this is their parnasa, it's a custom, every sefer Torah is a custom order. What do you want me to do? What ksaf? You want Beis Yosef? You want Arizal? Even in Beis Yosef and Arizal, there are so many different minhagim. How do you want me to write Hashem's name? The two hays, you could write it the same, you could write it different. We live in a dor dea, we know too much. And because we know too much, everyone wants to customize the product exactly to what they feel is ideal for them, for their community. What? You only have to write the Seder, tefillin, and zuzois. Backwards. You can write the whole Seder Torah backwards.
Except for Shem Hashem,
no. What do we know? Yeah. There's no din kesidur in the Shem Hashem.
Because I think lefties are quicker because they don't have to wait so much for it to dry.
No, I don't know.
So you write writing.
It's a different angle, different technique. No, it's all the same. There are some who are righties that are very, very fast, and there are some who are lefties that are shemazes.
You write the letters backwards.
Sefer Torah you can write backwards, not fill them with mezuzahs. Tefillin and mezuzahs must be written in order to Sidron. And that is no machlokes. There's no machlokes. No machlokes. No, there's no machlokes. That's the way how they appear, but you have to write a Sidron. There's no every. And if that's.
The letters in the order?
Yes. by tefillin and mezuzah. Yes. That is why if you have a psul and mezuzah or tefillin, you're finished. You can't just fix it. If the vav is cracked in your mezuzah, fix it, just fix it. If you fix it, you've written that vav out of order. So there's nothing you can do. If a tefillin and mezuzah, if one of the letters is pasul, finished. Over. You have to buy new tefillin, there's a sefer Torah, there's no halacha of kisidron. You fix, and you're done. That's the halacha. That's why tefillin and mezuzahs are so expensive. There's no fixing. As long as you know that the ones that you're going to exchange are written later. In other words, the first one, the shal yad and the shal rosh are separate. So it doesn't matter. You can write either one first or the second. So if you have a problem in your shal yad, you don't have to buy a new shal rosh. You just buy a new shal yad parchment. In the shal yad, it's on one piece of parchment.
Right.
There's nothing you can really do. You're not going to stitch it together. You can technically do that, but no one's going to do that today. Shal rosh, it's four compartments. So if, let's say, the psul is in the last parsha, you have four parshios in the shal rosh, and the psul is in the last parsha, in the hoya im shemaya. So then you just need to purchase a new v'hoya im shemaya. But if the psul is in shema, you can't write it today in the shema. If you have spare parts, and they're dated, and you know for sure that this Shema, or the Kaddish, was written before the other three parashios, then you can add it. But if you do not know, it's not dated, which they're rarely dated, you don't really know when it was written, so then there's nothing you can really do. Okay, that's Jalla. But the point we're making over here is that when you write the Shem Hashem, it has enormous Kedusha. And being that it's enormous Kedusha, he's adding a new element. I was going back telling you what they do is today, he told me, the Sefer told me, a very, very big Sefer. And when I was married to Shul about 6 months ago, I was sitting next to him on Shabbos, and I was asking him all the questions I had bothered. And he was telling me information that's unbelievable, all this information. And he says, today, basically, when you buy a Sefer Torah, it's custom ordered, every Sefer Torah. People don't know, so they just go to the store and they buy a Sefer Torah. But anyone who has a little bit is into this, like Eretz Yisrael, they're all into this. So you custom, there's a checklist of what you want. Every little thing you pay more money for. He told me today on the checklist is, are you makbid that the Sefer should go to mikvah before he writes anything in the Sefer Torah? In other words, he told me it went back to the olden days. And basically, if you don't pay for it, you don't get it. That's what he told me. Listen, if you go into the store, a person who doesn't never learn these halachas, and you want to buy a Sefer Torah, and you want to go put down $50,000 to buy a Sefer Torah, what are you going to do? You're going to go into a Pinchas over on Coney Island Avenue, or to go to Rabbi Schertzer on off Avenue J, and you're going to say, I have $50,000, I want to go buy a Sefer Torah, what should I buy? So he said, I have here in stock 10, 20 Sefer Torah. What? Right. A lot of Sefer, they just write and they sell it to Sefer. And what exactly did they do? What exactly, how was it written? If they're selling it just for many people, like in chutzlars who don't know the difference, they do whatever they want to do. And they're good people. These are chashra people. They do whatever they want to go do. And they tell them, I'm selling the Sefer Torah for this price. And the Sefer has on file everything that's really photocopied. Say no one has anything for real. That's something that you do have for real. Everything's photocopies. And it's ready to go. So, very good. Here's $50,000. Tomorrow you can have it. It's all ready to go. Most people, I'm not interested. I don't know the difference. Mikvah, not mikvah. The yud has this kites. And this letter is written this way and that base. So if I don't know these things. Is it kosher? I trust you. Rabbi Pinchas is an erelucha person. I see him every single day. He's such a good person. I trust you. He doesn't see me half the time. I trust you. Whatever you tell me, it's good, it's good. He wouldn't sell me something that's not kosher. Rabbi Schertzer, he wouldn't sell me something that's not mehudar. I don't need to know. Buy a pair of tefillin. Don't confuse me with the facts. Is it kosher? Kosher. It's all I need to know. But when you have a guy who's a Dracop and went through Shulchan Aruch and the Aruch HaShulchan and every sefer that's out there on Safras, and you know too much and you suffer from information overload And then you start asking questions. Well, did the Sofer tell me, is the Kotzer Shel Yud pointed in this direction? Or is it pointed in this? Is the Aleph, is the top of the Aleph parallel on this angle to the bottom of the Aleph? And you go in Meshagas, like these crazy, crazy things, which these are the hair of Hashem's name, which way is the Kotz pointed? I mean, things you never could even dream of. And these guys, I mean, they've gone through everything, so they know the stuff, and they started making all these crazy demands, and they drive everyone crazy. So what happened? So the industry became crazy. Where, oh, you want a Sefer Torah? So here's a checklist. What do you want? Tell me what you want, I'll do whatever you want. Whatever you want, I'll do. Just check off the dots. So that's an advantage, and it's a disadvantage. What is the disadvantage? Because since you're making me crazy, and you want to check off all these things, so... You know, you're going to pay for those things. And because you're not makbid on this, so I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to make myself a sugar.
I just bought Billin, and they show you the parches for, I think, $750 or $1,500.
The
custom made, it could go up to
$3,000
to $4,000.
Right, right, right. The
buttons
could be custom made.
Also, right. Everything
could be custom made. I asked organic, what generates the price in first time. That he said it's what the cipher wants back for his money. They work on a percentage, and with the cipher he gets more, so I got to charge more. So that's the difference in the price.
All right, here he does that. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The author's name is on the parchment.
No, there's no such thing.
Well, he knows it.
What?
He may know the cipher.
The computer knows today. The computer knows the cipher. The computer has his handwriting recognition. Today, there's never, ever such a thing as a Sofer signing his work. It's very fascinating. You know why it's so fascinating? Because Piyutim, it never existed to write a Piyut without putting your name into it. Not your initials, the acrostic. The acrostic. There's no such thing. There's never such a thing as someone writing a Piyut without putting his name in the acrostic. If you don't put your name in the acrostic, it means you don't know the name. You ever see a piyut that doesn't have a remez to the author's name in it? Okay, no such thing. But when it comes to writing the Sefer Torah, told the mezuzos, so it's an art. Your ksav, your unique stamp. And yet there's no such, it's also, it's forbidden for a sofer to sign his art. Isn't that an amazing thing? You ever see a painting that doesn't have the name of the artist? Who? No such thing as a painting doesn't have the name of the artist. Of course he knows. He has to pay them. He gets commission. But it's not, there's no such thing as identity. That itself is a fascinating... No, you're not allowed to. No. The Koishi Gadol, they were matir years ago, matir to make a pinhole, a teeny pinhole on the parashah, on the parchment, to identify in case it's stolen. In case the Sefer Torah is stolen, there's an organization, I don't know if it's still popular, the religion popular, where they make pinholes. I did it for all the Sefer Torah, my father's shul. They give you a guide, and you make pinholes in the guide, and it tell you exactly where. And in case chas v'shol it is, and you register it with a registry. And in case ever it's stolen and it turns up in the hands of the police, so they can immediately identify it. They go to those columns, and then they can identify by feeling it or by technique, light, exactly where the holes are, how they're aligned, and they look it up in the registry, and there's a name, there's an address, there's a telephone number, you can identify it. So how are you allowed to do that? There's a whole shayla, you got to do that. You're allowed to go make a pinhole in the parchment, and there's also a whole dilemma, you can do it. But when it comes to writing, that itself is a very fascinating concept, is that it is categorically forbidden to sign your artwork. Every Sefer Torah is unique. Your handwriting, your script, there are no two people who have the same handwriting in the world. It does not exist. No two people have the same thing. No two people think alike. No two people look alike. No two people in the world have the same handwriting. It's all science behind this.
Somebody sure to tell me that the whole difference in the price is whose hand.
Well,
well,
it's a reputation. Reputation. Look, I know. Well, yeah, the subbing, who would you rather have a Sefer Torah written from? Someone whose handwriting is mediocre, but is a very big Yoreh Shamayim, versus a person whose style, whose writing is exquisite. Is not such a kosher of Yashar. Another question: who would you rather have a Sefer Torah written by? That they certainly get very bored when they write. Very bored. It's very, very boring work. And so what do they do? Well, some of them listen to Torah tapes. They listen to Shiurim. They're listening to Shiurim while they're writing. And some of them are listening to a classical music. Not even Jewish music. Classical music. Some listen to Jewish music. Some listen to Goyish classical music. And some listen to not Jewish music. Now, so what's so bad? What's so terrible? I don't know. Not for me to say. But let me ask you a question. Who would you rather purchase a Sefer Torah from? A Sefer who wrote the Sefer Torah while he was in the background. He was listening to Shiurim. Well, maybe that's also no good. Maybe you shouldn't be listening to anything. Don't listen to anything. You should be concentrating on your work, injecting Kedusha into the letters. So who would you rather write? Boy, who's doing nothing, listening to Torah Shiurim, listening to Jewish music, listening to old classical music, non-Jewish classical music, or listening to some music on the FM radio, whatever is on, that was never on today. Because these shilas that I'm talking about didn't even exist in those days. There was no music to listen to in those days.
Which one would you choose?
The one who's doing nothing. That's
even
the best.
Even though his handwriting is not that nice.
To a degree. Is it kosher? It's a dilemma. Obviously, there has to be a balance. Obviously, there is a balance. And then there's an issue. There's a halacha that some hold that when it comes to tefillin and mezuzos, there is no inyan that it should be beautiful. It can be.
You're never going to read it.
You're never going to see it.
That's what I'm saying. That's what government's saying. It depends who wrote it.
Well, there's a reputation. A person who has a reputation is being a Yoreh Shamayim. First, you have to understand that there are so many halachas. There are so many things that can go wrong. So you're trusting that he's a Yoreh Shamayim. He's a Yoreh Shamayim that he's writing. I know I was involved in buying tefillin for a nephew. So when it came down to it, we had a choice of two cipher, based upon whatever the consideration. When it came down, we had a choice. So there were two. One had was a very famous person. He was a very well-known person. And I know him. I know who he is. I know him. I know him personally. And he's a very beautiful, he's a very fine person, really. He's a very beautiful handwriting. And there's this other guy, he was a Yerushalmi. He's living in Beis Shemesh. He doesn't even have a cell phone. Literally, he does not own a cell phone. And he doesn't know the Tzuras HaMatbeya. His ksav was a little bit different. His ksav was a thicker, a whole long story. So it was Hashkocha Pratis. I went to Davin Ma'arif in a shul. And my brother said, look at that, he's here. That's the other candidate, the other cipher. And he was sitting at that time after Maariv, learning with his children. After Maariv, he had like little children. And I went over to him, and I was so impressed with him. My brother said, he doesn't even have a cell phone. He was such a pure person. And he says he's a top-of-the-line cipher. And I was so impressed with him. Now, his ksav is not considered to be as nice. What's wrong? Is not considered to be as nice as the other cipher. The other cipher I know, he's a macher. He's a macher. He's a very beautiful ksav. He's running around the whole day. He's on the cell phone the whole day, doing deals. Doing deals. Wholesaling. Wholesaling.
That's how he makes it
by now. Yeah, of course. Of course. Adarabba. I have time to say halavaya. And he's very well. I think that person he wrote for Al-Yashif. He wrote for Al-Yashif, a tefillin, a pair of tefillin. For some reason, you know something? I like this guy. The other guy, the Yerushalmi guy, he's just like, you know, for tefillin, he's so pure. He's so pure. And also, he needed the money also. He's very poor. This guy is a big mach, you know, he's a celebrity type of sofer. This guy, he needed the money. He needed, that's probably something like that's the ikar. He needed the money more, and he's such a pure person. He has a little cell phone. You know, it's a milah for me. I would normally laugh at someone who doesn't have a cell phone. Come on, you're living in the dark ages. You know, get with it. But, you know, it's funny, in this instance, it was like a milah. This guy is so pure. Adarabba, let it be. Okay, so one thing you learn, when you write Sefer Torah, it's a davar sheb kedusha. The Shem Hashem is the spitz of writing, it's the spitz, and at least we learn one halacha today, the sensitivity that goes into writing the Shem Hashem. Okay, take a short break, and we'll learn about some Yoni Pesach.